Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna, and today, well, we're going to be tripping into the area of mystery, fantasy, old Hollywood, murder, mayhem, and, well, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and even some more. It's really a delight to be able to welcome to the airwaves Michael Oldham, and he has written a book called The Valentino Formula. And I have seen old film clips about Valentino and, oh, so many other personalities that those of you that may be in love with Hollywood, I was born and raised in Southern California, so the golden years of Hollywood are often talked about by people, even today, no matter what their generation is, because they were fascinating years, filled many times with mystery and all kinds of delicious goodies. It was a different world than the one that we're in today, and Michael, you put together this book. You have authored five other Hollywood-related books. Why is it that Valentino, the heartthrob of millions and millions of people, women especially, I mean, the woman in black has been talked about forever, what grabbed your interest where this mystery became such a part of your thinking that you had to write it out?
Well, Donna, thank you for having me on. My good friend John Thomas was on your show last fall with his Thanksgiving books, and from there I found out about your show. Back to Valentino. Why Valentino? Rudolph Valentino is a very mysterious figure. There's a lot of myths and stories and possibilities about him. His ex-wife, Natasha Rambova, said he's an actor in the afterlife. She went around saying that for years after he died. There's been seances at the famous home of Valentino in the hills, just above Beverly Hills. Falcon Lar, his last estate, the home that he had in 1926. There's been seances trying to find a connection to him from here to the afterlife. So Valentino is a mysterious figure, and as I point out in the novel, one character points out, Rudolph Valentino is unlike all the other major silent stars, such as Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, Mary Pickford. Rudolph Valentino acted and stayed only and died inside the era of silent films. He never knew the talkies.
That, oh, interesting.
Makes
okay.
Him more mysterious. Now, most people under the age of 40 have probably still heard of the name of Charlie Chaplin, less so about Valentino, but he is still possibly the second person that you would know from the silent era besides Charlie Chaplin.
Well, I can remember seeing some film clips on some history program. And the silent films, if ever you have a chance to watch them, they're amazing. And of course, in today's world, we have so many special effects, we don't realize what a phenomenal accomplishment that was in its time, because people to have films up on this white sheet, for all intents and purposes, of a screen, and to have this drama being acted out and the person plunking away on a piano, creating the theme music that gave even more emotion to what was going on. And if I remember correctly, this was a man that on the screen, women would just swoon when they would see him. I remember hearing these stories and they'd go, really? But, this was bigger than life. This is an incredible guy who was really good looking.
Yes, I remember the first time I saw him as an adult. I may have seen clips of him as a kid on documentaries, but the first time I saw him as an adult, I remember somebody pointing out to me that, as you see, your eyes go right to Rudy whenever he's on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
I witnessed this in the next presentation when I went and saw a recently found film of Valentino, and the magnetism on the screen is amazing. It will affect girls, and it will affect men, me. It will definitely say to yourself, and I'm a man's man, but when Valentino's on the screen, you say to yourself, who is that man?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, what was the one that was just, it was considered one of the hottest films that he did? He played some kind of a sheik. What was that film?
There was The Sheik itself, and it was, these were all in the up to 1926. But the film that launched his career is The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, and memory serves, that was 1922.
Amazing.
Yeah, he was discovered. Now, he was sidelined right after that in some kind of very odd contractual arrangement, and part of that was his strange wife, Natasha Rambova, managing his career, or would I say mismanaging his career. But he did star in the film. You're thinking of the film The Sheik. And I believe that was 24, 25. I don't have these memorized. But then he also had a sequel called The Son of the Sheik. And I want to emphasize that I wrote a novel on Valentino, and trust me, when I'm at book signings, most of the questions are on Rudy himself, Rudolph Valentino, and I always point out, I wrote a novel on Valentino, but I am no expert on him beyond reading a biography or two on the man and seeing some films. I immediately grasped that this man had an interesting background and some true life events that launched the novel idea.
Well, and I think that your novel is utterly fascinating, but one of the things I want to touch on, because so many of my listeners are not going to necessarily be familiar with him, especially if they're of the younger generation, but this was a man that I think, when it came to Hollywood, the little bit that I know about him, really set a precedent for green and for presence, because he had these very dark, handsome, you know, he just had this, like you mentioned, charisma that came across on the screen. And women just loved it, and of course, gee whiz, you sell the gals, you're going to make money at the box office.
And
absolutely. He set a precedent in the way he presented himself, and that, I think, enabled like the Gary Coopers and the Cary Grants, and you think of those that became really popular during the 40s and the 50s, the 30s, 40s, and 50s, I guess you'd say. You can stretch them out there. It really was something, but for him to be able to convey so much with his eyes in the silent films, just that one little bit that I saw, I thought, boy, no wonder the women in the can't blame them. I mean, when you didn't have very much choice about what you could do in life other than having babies and keeping the house clean, to be able to escape to the movies and watch this good-looking guy there was just incredible.
Good-looking and also a foreigner. He was from Italy, and he was called the Latin Lover. Early, before he became famous, he played a few shady characters, and if you ever get a chance to see clips of those films, he's taking his wallet and putting it in his sports jacket, and he is an extremely smooth, debonair, just a perfect actor. I mean, you'd never catch him acting, as Gary Cooper would say. Don't ever catch anybody act. Let them catch you acting. But yeah, Valentino could. It was very versatile. Unfortunately, they really emphasized his good looks in his latter career, and they capitalized on that. Sometimes they look a little overbearing, like the sheiks when he seduces women. But
oh, yeah.
So, Valentino, they were aware of what they were doing with him, and it was selling movie tickets. And I have to say, he's one of the first, if not the first, one author calls him the first superstar. He was the first author, or first movie star to be mobbed in public. He had a fear for his life on his first realization that he was fame. He was simply walking along Sunset Boulevard, and a crowd virtually mobbed him and started to physically rip his clothes off. He had to go into a clothing store, and they chased him, and he was in fear for his life.
Oh, isn't that amazing? Well, folks, Elvis wasn't the only one that had things taken, but Elvis was smarter. He took it off and threw it out to the audience. Rudolph couldn't think that way. That wasn't in that era, and that just tickles me no end to hear that, because we're talking about the 20s, early 20s. Mm-hmm. Now, at the very beginning of your book, you have a quote by Rudolph Valentino, and this is what he says: "What the average man calls death, I believe to be merely the beginning of life itself. We simply live beyond the shell. We emerge from out of its narrow confines like a chrysalis. Why call it death?" Now, that really intrigued me, because if I remember correctly, he died young. Was it an appendicitis attack? What happened to him?
I know my mom is not the most unbiased source, but she said the novel gripped her right at that quote line. So it's an interesting quote I found early on when I was writing the novel, and I'm glad Valentino wrote that. Where were we? He was a spiritual guy.
Mm-hmm.
He believed in the afterlife. He attended some seances, and he had an Indian guide he called Black Feather that he thought guided his life along a path that would help him in life.
Amazing. But when he died, wasn't there something like an appendicitis attack, something of that nature? Am I confusing him with another actor?
No, he died in New York in 1926 at the relatively young age of 31. He went into the hospital. In layman's terms, I'm not a doctor, I'm not going to pronounce what he actually died of. It starts with a P. I think it's peritonitis or something. There I go trying to pronounce it. He had a bleeding ulcer.
And
what happened was bacteria got into his bloodstream, and he died basically, that killed him. I'm not a doctor, but he basically died from the poison that escaped from his ulcer into mm-hmm. his bloodstream. That's how I remember it. He was on his deathbed for, 2 or 3 days, if I remember. He had a lot of visitors. He had recently hooked up with his first wife. They had repaired their relationship. It was a very sad ending. And unfortunately, too, something came true, and this is how my novel came to fruition. In the early 20s, Rudolph Valentino did see a fortune teller in Ocean Park, where my novel begins, in the mm-hmm. early 20s. He saw a fortune teller in real life, and that fortune teller predicted that he would die a very young death. And Valentino left that parlor and went to lunch with a friend, very upset. And he told the friend, "I'm not going back to that fortune teller."
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, there was such a mystique about him, too, because at his funeral, there was the woman in black, and she appeared for years on the anniversary of his death.
Yes. There still is today a woman in black.
Really?
Yes.
After all these years?
You could Google it. I think her name is Carrie Bible, I think. You could Google that. But she's taken the place of the woman in black. I really like to say woman in black. There was a mm-hmm. few of them. That's part of the lore, part of the mystery of Valentino, where his crypt is in Hollywood Memorial Park, mm-hmm. I believe it's called. And people visit the crypt as death, and they hold a ceremony there, and it's quite interesting.
It's amazing to me how a legend begins. He died at a very young age, very unfortunate circumstances. I think of James Dean dying at a very young age, unfortunate circumstances. And though they were of different eras, they have followers today in the numbers of the thousands. It's just amazing to me. And I would have thought with Valentino that after all of these years, he died in 1926, and holy Joseph, it's still going on.
Yes, and he died what you would refer to as a perfect artist death, young, at his prime, and with a lot of mystery around him. He was single at the time. He had just bought a mansion in Beverly Hills the year before, I believe. And he would have been a very interesting character to watch travel into the talking films era of the late 20s and 1930s and beyond. Critics have said his voice, some have said his voice would not have worked, but most say it definitely would have worked in the talking film business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of people, when it went into talk, they had voices. In fact, Singing in the Rain, the movie that Gene Kelly, Debbie Reynolds, Donald O'Connor, it's a classic. It's absolutely marvelous. But it's about that very thing, the moving from the silent film into the talkies.
Right. A lot of people were not able to make that transition due to their voice or due to their mannerisms. Silent films and talkies, or modern films of today, they're two different art forms, and you have to realize that, and you have to appreciate them for that. It's silent films is an art form. Talking films is a separate art form.
Very, very
much
so.
For silent films, such as Rudy Valentino's films, you have to really watch them. You can't relax and eat a bag of potato chips. So you were very focused on watching them. And during the silent film era, as a percentage of population, there's never been a higher percentage of the population going to the movie theaters. It's been going down ever since. Google it. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting fact. Now, today's there's a number of variety of entertainment options, radio, television, and concert, other such things,
right.
iPods.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes.
So it's fascinating when you think about these things. Now, your book, the Valentino Formula. I love you've got his picture on the front. Whoever did the artwork did an exquisite job because it really fits the format. Now, this is about a single specialized formula that, if ever it was implemented, it could bring Rudolph Valentino back to life. And there is a story that you built around this. And it is absolutely captivating. And you have so many different characters, Stein and Manning and all of the people that were involved with this special formula, and how an individual who is in possession of it ends up being killed, and, well, it goes on from there. When you were putting this story together, I'm always intrigued because with mysteries you have so many different characterizations.
Mm-hmm.
How do these people come to life for you? Because you really infuse a life into these characters. It really is captivating. And it's done where you go into the days of the 20s and after Rudolph Valentino dies and this phenomenal mystery, and you bring it up into the modern day. How did you, how did these characters come to life for you?
I write mainly on a daily basis, meaning I knew from the beginning the ending of the novel. I knew ultimately I changed it, but I knew where I was headed. But mm-hmm. Every day that I sit down to write, and I'm doing this with a novel that I'm writing now, my second novel, I can look ahead about 4 to 6 days ahead. I have an outline. So it's a moving, working outline that's always about 4 to 6 days ahead. As I'm typing that current day's page, ideas come, so I put it up in the queue. And so, and I just type in a single line of what I'm going to do on coming up. I learned that's just how I write. I don't do a massive outline. And so, I don't do a massive outline. I do a daily updated outline. But as I tell people, the main plot of writing a novel is really not the key to a novel. It's the subplots that make a novel good or boring.
That is true. You have gone in. Not only do you have all of these different characters and the son of a man who at one time possessed the formula and ended up being killed because he possessed this phenomenal formula that was going to have a very, very evil connotation to it. And there was a group of special individuals that got together to try to figure things out. I mean, there's that. But you go into spiritualism quite a bit. You go in, it's like remarks that you have here, spirits choose their own messengers. You talk about the different mediums. You mention the woman that really was based on truth that you started to say right at the beginning of the show. But you talk about these various people with talents. You have just a wonderful way of bringing in these various components, and you weave them together so that someone says, well, wait a minute, I better finish this chapter, but I want to go to the next one because I want to be sure that I catch up with whatever's going on in this other section of plot. And it really does make for a very interesting read.
Well, thank you. That was the last section I had to rewrite, that spiritual part. And I won't tell you who is talking about spiritualism then. It would give away the plot.
Mm-hmm.
But I wrote that probably in about a week and a half over several days running. And I found myself stopping after, I think it was 15 pages, and I said, holy cow, how did that come out of me? But I think I wrote down, basically, in a general sense, my overall belief that we can choose from right or wrong if we have a sound mind, that the God out there allows us to have free will, and that subject right there can make for interesting conversations. And I noticed on your website that you have long ago learned to accept the world of the paranormal as commonplace. I thought that was an interesting thing on your website as I was reviewing your bio. And I thought, geez, I wonder if that's me. And I began to think today, wait, that is me. I am a believer in God. And that, by definition, has me accepting paranormal possibility. That's I just realized that today. I'm in agreement with Donna Siebel.
Well, thank you very much. Oh, isn't it? It's so nice to be able to be right. I really think that your book, by taking us back, using your words, the Hollywood of yesterday, which to me is so intriguing and so fascinating because it was so very, very different. And I think because of various programs that I've seen about the old way of making movies and the first camera that ever rolled backwards so that they could be in front of the horse and the actor or actress when they were in their scene, and it was drawn by a car, or I forget what it was, but you think of those beginnings and how the movies evolved. And you look at today and what goes on, and it's just a fascinating and intriguing theme to explore and to get into. And when you get into the Valentino scenario and you have all of this, I'll call it mystic, unique happenings that go on, and that is intertwined with stories about all kinds of people, investigations, greed, a romance. You have a beautiful love story in here. And all of these things coming together and how truth eventually does come forward. In a way, it reminds me of the program Cold Case, where they go back and they're investigating things that supposedly nobody could solve at the time, but things start coming together. You must have really had a good time with this when you were putting it together. How did you know, or when did you know that you had finished everything with the book as you needed to finish?
Well, first, let me address that old Hollywood. The Valentino formula is a novelization of my Hollywood knowledge. Now, I'm a big believer like you. I know from listening to you that you get it. There is nothing like old Hollywood. There's nothing like an old Hollywood cozy mystery book. Old Hollywood is a vast treasure trove of interesting stories, mystery, ghosts. It's just a goosebump feeling. Gloria Swanson, Rudolph Valentino, Richard Dix, Barthelmess, Warner Baxter, all these characters, they're never boring. If you see a picture of them, something happens to you when you see a postcard picture of any silent star, Eve Southern. You just won't believe her photographs. You won't believe her postcards. Mary Miles Minter. Today's world is so boring. I just don't think the Tom Cruises of today, nothing wrong with Tom Cruise, but he's in a different art world. And so will he be looked at with the mystery of a silent star such as Harold Lloyd or Charlie Chaplin or Mary Pickford? I don't think so. They're in a different art form. They're in a different world. The silent screen world has a lot of unknowns in it, and they still are discovering things today. And I still go down to the library and research where they used to live, and I think to myself, nobody knows that this silent star has lived here before. Nobody knows that Bessie Love, a major silent star in the late teens and early 20s, lived in this old house that these cars are whizzing by. Yes, I think you get it, Donna, that old Hollywood, there's just no feeling like it.
Yeah, it's just incredible. Now, I know we're just about out of time. What is your website where people can find out more, not only about this novel, the Valentino formula, but also the others that you've written? What's your website?
I would just simply go to Amazon and under books, simply type in the Valentino formula. And it gets you right there. And then you can scroll down when you click on the Valentino formula, the book, and you'll see an author's page. And just click that on. You'll see my less than handsome face compared to Valentino. And you'll click that on, and you'll see a listing of all my books, including the Valentino formula. And thank you for asking.
I want to say this was really a good mystery. And if you're a mystery fan, as I am, I think having a book that spans like 80 years of time and all of the various unique patternings that go with old Hollywood, I just think it's a fascinating read, and all of the other variables that go into it. The Valentino formula, Michael Oldham has been my guest today. I want to thank you, Michael. This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just
thank
a moment.
You, Donna.
You're welcome.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. I invite you to give me a call if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. The telephone number to call into is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I want to let you know we've got some great guests coming up in the week. In front of us, mentor in the Garden of Life, Colleen Plimpton, is my guest, brought in by L. Fisher, Dreamed Up Reality by Bernardo Kastrup. We're going to be talking with Lou Paradise in the pharmaceutical industry, and then we're going to be talking about a book that I'm telling you is awesome. It's a piece of American history. It's called China's Wings. This is an amazing publication. Gregory Crouch is going to be my guest, so I know that you will enjoy it a great deal. Well, again, telephone line is open, 888-627-6008. And for those of you that are listening in New York and or Alaska, I am going to be on the road starting next week, actually. I'll be in New York City, and I'm going to be there for a few days, and then I will be heading up to Alaska. So if you're interested in meeting with me on a private basis, I would be delighted to do so. Just give me a call at my office, 253-582-5604, and we'll do exactly that. And don't forget, May 1st, New showtime, 9 a.m. in the morning. After 6 years of being in the afternoon slot, we are moving May 1st to 9 a.m. with the Donna Sebo Show. I want to thank so many of you that are sending me so much awesome information. And I had someone that is from Alaska said, Donna, I wanted to send you some information. They made a copy of an article. Actually, it was an advertisement for Lysol. And sometimes when you go into things that were made popular or famous at one time or another, you are amazed at what people accepted. But advertising rules unless you question. Well, this was actually an ad that came out of the Chicago Tribune, December the 12th in 1944. And it is a write-up. It says, it's titled, An Everyday Tragedy. And there's a picture of a woman in her, 40s dress behind her husband who is sitting in his oversized easy chair. This is a Donna Reed scene, okay? He's reading his newspaper. And this is how it reads. It says, Marriage happiness lost. And now just a miserable life of quarrels and tears. It might happen to any wife because of one neglect, carelessness about feminine hygiene. Today, as many modern wives use Lysol disinfectant. You're hearing me correctly. This is what the ad read. And it cleans quickly, thoroughly, and deodorizes too. Yet it's so gentle, doesn't harm sensitive tissues. Just follow easy directions. Use economical Lysol, gives the address. They had a free hygiene thing. And I just read this, and I sat there and I laughed. Because if you've ever read anything about Dr. Schweitzer, who was in Africa, and I know we've got a listener, let me share this little trivia bit of information with you. They used Lysol in Africa to keep the army ants out of their buildings. I just don't think you'd want to use it for feminine hygiene. But hey, folks. That's what was being promoted in December of 1944, probably before and afterwards. And at the bottom it says, buy an extra $100 war bond. A different time, a different era, and a lack of understanding and information. I wonder what caused them to drop that part of their advertising. Do we really want to know? I don't think so. Let's go to our first caller of the day, and thank you. Thank you very much, Colleen, for sending that to me. That was just a riot. Okay, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
From New York.
New York City. I'm going to be there next week.
Yes.
What's your first name or initial?
F.
All right.
Last name, L. Yes.
All right. Well, what I want to say to you right off the bat, F, is that you have got a lot of work cut out for you this year. I would say these next 2 to 3 months, you must pay attention to detail. You cannot assume anything. You've really got to stay on top of those everyday items that you must tend to because you are reorganizing certain aspects of your life. You are really, really wanting to clear out, I think, what you consider old stuff that you don't need anymore. And I'm not just talking about literal, I'm talking about figuratively as well. You're saying enough is enough. I am moving on. So mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, you're ready to be in a brand new level. And I think that this year you're really committed to making those changes that are necessary and shaving away gradually those aspects of your life that you no longer wish to be involved with or even bothered with. And you're finding that your clarity is really very, very good, and I want to say keep it up. But it's a very hard-working year. And you've got a number of people around you that I think are going through some very, very intense emotional challenges. And those emotional challenges, you cannot absorb them. If you absorb them, you're just going to be a wreck. You need to be sort of detached. Listen, you can be compassionate and understanding, but you don't take on or try to be the major repairer of whatever is misaligned in their life, because this is how they grow, by figuring things out on their own. So I just think you're really realizing you need to invest in yourself. And I want to say go for it, because when you invest in yourself in whatever way, physical, mental, spiritual, emotional, or all of the above, you are going to be able to actually give more in life to others because you're doing that for yourself. So just stay true and pay attention to what you need to do for you. Do you have a question for me?
Yes. Yes. I wonder about my son. And then do you, like, can you see, like, what age he can get married?
Oh, I wouldn't worry about it. He's not really ready for marriage yet. How old is he?
He's 32.
He's 32. I'd say when he's about 36 to 38, I think he'll be ready for marriage. But he's really not ready for marriage right now. He has got some other things that he really wants to take care of. And I don't know that he wants to have someone in his life that he is committed to in the form of marriage. I think a girlfriend, a relationship is fine, but he doesn't want to be, in his mind, tied down right now. No, he's not. He's really not ready for marriage, so I wouldn't worry about that.
Okay. All right. Another thing is my religion, right? I have a kind of, I feel like lots of pressure on me. Like religion, please. Do you think they can accept what I told them? I try to to get less responsibility. What do you think? I will get stay there, and then I get little bit with less.
I think what's going to happen is that there are those people who wouldn't be happy with whatever you did. They're going to be upset that you're even saying, no, this is not something I want to do. So you need to accept that and just make that okay. You don't even get upset over it. I think that there are those people that are going to respect you because you have taken a stand and you are saying no. And they'll go, wow, I wish I could be like her. So I think what you've done is right for you, and I think it is part of what you need to do anyway, because you've come to that decision. You're looking at some other things that you want to do for yourself, and I think that that's very important.
Yes.
So I think you're doing well. You just keep on doing what you know you need to do for yourself.
Okay, for myself.
Yes, ma'am.
That way, you mean, eh? Okay. So how about my daughter? I feel curious. What time she will get married because of eye cancer?
Oh, my goodness. Stop worrying about your kids. Stop worrying about them. They're fine. You live in a different era now. They're getting married later. And don't worry about your daughter.
She's 30 years old.
No, she's young. Don't worry about it. She is fine. She's fine.
Okay.
You want her to get married for the right reasons. And don't worry. You'll have some grandkids. That'll be fine.
How old she can get a good person?
Oh, she's going to marry a very fine person. Very, very fine person. But not for a while. My goodness. Mom, leave her alone. She's fine.
I know.
And I've got to go. It's time for me to take a break.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much for calling.
Okay, have a nice day.
Thank you, dear. Bye-bye. This is Donna Tebow.
Bye-bye.
We're taking a break, and we're going to be back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Tebow. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it, and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Phone lines are open, 888-627-6008. A gentleman by the name of Benjamin Fairless made the following comment. He asked the question first, what is the recipe for successful achievement? To my mind, there are just four essential ingredients. Choose a career you love, give it the best there is in you, seize your opportunities, and be a member of the team. In no country but America, I believe, is it possible to fulfill all four of these requirements. Benjamin Fairless. It is so fascinating to watch how different countries like China and India are gradually opening up opportunities for people to explore that were previously not even something you could consider. You could dream, you could desire, you could work, you could push, you could do whatever you wanted, and it just wasn't going to happen. But that is changing. And I think that that is so significant because it is true that here in the United States, that is a possibility. You can do it. I've said for so many years, because of having been born and raised in Southern California, that if you wanted to have a job, you could always find work down in California. You could sell oranges on a street corner. And the last time I was down there, a short time ago, people were selling oranges on a street corner. And you can make a living. It's amazing. New York City is like that. All of your big cities, Chicago, there are ways that if you're willing to work, you can have a real good income. And I think having that kind of an attitude of really going after what you want, putting yourself into an industry, immersing yourself into an industry that you dearly love, is so important because you never know what venue you're going to end up at. There's a young man that I've known, oh my goodness, ever since he was born, actually, and I just am thrilled to see how as a teenager, he's now 17 years old, he is just absolutely, totally committed to the area of music and entertainment. And he started getting into instruments and entertaining when he was, about 10, 11 years of age, and he did a number of things, but music really grabbed his heart. And so he got involved with different groups, he got involved with rock and roll, and now as a musician at the young age of 17, not only can he play with rock and roll groups, which he might be interning with a very, very significant person in the music industry in Seattle, but he is part of a rock and roll school. He's part of this environment and has been like for 5 or 6 years. Then he got involved in the classical. Now that may seem like, totally incompatible. But what he did, he immersed himself in it. He was curious. Well, this is a young man that not only can play guitar with a fury for rock and roll and has amplifiers and all this other stuff, but he started the viola, which is another stringed instrument. He is taking piano lessons. He's learning that. He has gotten involved with so many different instruments, and it has created an environment for him where he's met people from all walks of life, from all kinds of musical backgrounds, and he's become extremely proficient, and he's getting better and better and better. And he determined that where he wanted to be in the musical industry was working with sound, working with studio equipment, this type of thing. So he's going to be going into college, and he researched colleges and has found an environment that is going to support the interest area that he's a part of. But another thing that he did, partially because of the interviews that I've conducted through the years of my 11 years of having the Donna Sebo Show, I've encountered people from all walks of life, and some of them were really successful business people in the musical industry, and I shared those books with him, and he actually read them. So this young man, whose name is Dylan, has had such a passion for life, and I think he's a good example for anybody of any age. He is not closing doors on any opportunities for him to gain experience in the area of entertainment and music that he loves so much. And it has brought him into a sense of understanding of really what he wants to do, how he wants to do it, and he's learning about the money side of the business, too. So he is going into college not only with working experience, because his mom, even though she does well with her job, which is full-time working in a very unique industry, by golly, he has learned about how to save money and doing all kinds of things. And I think adults, again, anyone of any age, could really learn from this young man how when you motivate yourself and you're willing to explore, you're willing to develop your skills, you're going to go further than you could have ever imagined. And you may find yourself in environments that are going to show you new opportunities that you probably wouldn't have considered if you didn't have the exposure. And that is why whenever you're going through your growth cycles as an individual, you need to remember your paradigms are going to change. Things cannot be kept the same. I was talking with a client just a short time ago that said, I don't like change. And it scares me when I am doing something that's going to take me into an unknown. But it's those unknowns that create opportunities for you to spread your wings so you can learn how to fly. It's so important. Invest in yourself. Realize that life is really an adventure to be lived. Not just read about, but to be lived. And if you're in a cocoon and you never break out of it, you'll never find the beauty that you've got inside yourself. You'll never be able to spread your wings so that you can fly anywhere in the world that you want to go in the way of experience and learning and just enjoying the zest of life. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Take care. God bless. We'll be back with you. Same time, same place, right here on BBS Radio on Monday. Take care. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.